Hey guys, we are now live on YouTube. I kicked it over to LinkedIn. Welcome everybody to the three podcasters walk into a bar. My name's Stu Turley, President and CEO of the Sandstone Group. And I tell you what, you ever had that crazy old uncle that, like at Christmas vacation, where he says these three guys walk into a bar? I happen to know the other two. We got David Blackman. David Blackman is one of my favorite compadres in the world. We got us some Substack stuff. He's Substack. He is on
Forbes,
Forbes. He's
the
on the
Daily
Daily
Caller.
Caller. He's on the Telegraph. I mean, the man is a legend in my mind. Then we have RT. RT. RT Trevino is one of them big dogs over there at Pecos operating. RT, welcome, and we appreciate you. How's everything going for you? And you are the podcast host for The Crude Truth, and we will all be at NAPE live.
I'm excited about that. We're working on a few things over here at Pecos Country Operating right now for NAPE. But hey, I'm excited that we're going to have the one of the podcast pavilions. I guess we're going with the Crude Truth Podcast Pavilion presented by Stuart Turley, David Blackman, and Ray Trevino. I'm very, very excited, and what a lineup we're going to have of guests. And I think we're going to start dropping advertisements and for that here real soon. And get David's face all over the internet.
Oh my God, not
Excited.
my face. I'll have to shave. I don't want to
Yeah, you're back. We don't need to see that.
shave.
Okay. Hey, guys, I want to get us kicked off. RT, you brought it up, the Red Sea. And it is an amazing choke point in that. And then after that, we can go over to David's predictions, which I think are phenomenal. I got a bone to pick with one of them, but I think we ought to chug over to the Red Sea and see what's going on over there. Didn't Iran just have an explosion go on this morning?
I'm kind of confused about it. Like they were at a funeral celebrating somebody that President Trump ordered a hit on.
Al-Zawahiri, the Iranian military leader that President Trump took out with a drone in Iraq in 2019.
So who did the attack this morning? That's what I'm confused about.
We don't know yet.
Oh.
Stu thinks Lindsey Graham did it. I don't think that's right.
Oh, did he really? I don't know about that. That's a little funny if you ask me.
Hey, Lindsay, did you do it? He's a warmonger. I apologize. I am not a Lindsey Graham fan, and you heard it here second.
Well, I tell you what, it just adds more fuel to the fire there in the Middle East right now. And it's just another domino that has dropped, and yet oil prices have not changed at all. I think they've gone up a dollar today, and we were at
Yeah, I
$70.
think they were up $2 earlier today, but
Are we up
still,
two now?
yeah.
I mean, if this was 15 years ago, that alone would have dropped, raised us $5 to $10 in within the hour.
Yep, fear
So
factor's a lot less, isn't it?
it is. It's kind of interesting how that works.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the renewables, right, that we have on the
I
roads
guess, yeah.
today.
The stationary batteries, that's what it is.
Oh my gosh. No, but have y'all seen everything that is going on in the Red Sea right now? That we have ships that can go through the straits, some that are having to go all the way around the Horn there in South Africa. I mean, what's going on there? And are we going to see some prices, you think, increase there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to some extent, to the extent tankers are having to avoid the Red Sea and take their cargoes all the way around the Horn of Africa. What is it? Yeah, Cape Horn. And up to Europe into the US and Western markets, that increases the transportation costs, and that will result in an increase in prices once those cargoes start to land. But they're weeks away from doing that. So there really hadn't been a an impact on crude prices from higher transportation costs yet. Now, that will come sooner or later. And the extent of it, though, when you really look at it as a percentage of all crude sold in the world, you have what, 20 to 25% of oil coming out of the Middle East, and maybe half of that going to Western markets with the rest going to China India and other Asian markets. So, even the increased transportation cost is going to be diluted just by the fact that, that's only a fraction of those exports are going to those Western markets. So it'll be an impact, but it won't be anything real major.
Hey David, yesterday the great, or was it yesterday? I'm in a time warp. A, I'm old. The great Tammy Namath on the Armando show that you were on was fantastic when she said it was the OPEC ships and the that region were you still using the Red Sea and they weren't being attacked. It was the West. It was the U. Anybody that was associated with the U.S. or Britain or UK or EU was getting attacked. So I thought
And
Tammy.
see, and I don't know what percentage of tankers are owned by the OPEC countries, owned by oil companies, owned by independent third-party contractors. And so that's the thing. But again, that's as you're right, that's another dilution of what the price impact will ultimately be, because, like you say, all the Saudi ships are still going through the Red Sea. So,
Oh, absolutely.
yeah, and there's no, they don't have any fears. I had one question. I was speaking this morning on the radio, and they go, what's going on? Are these ships being escorted at this time? And I said, man, I hope not, because if they are, that just raises the cost even that much more. And that's not what we're trying to do by any form or fashion, is continue to increase. It's one thing to increase the price of a barrel of oil, but it's one thing to do it when you have to add in new transportation costs, new security fees. And I know David, we had a good chance to talk about this Red Sea. And the other part you mentioned is, hey, we won't really see those costs until they reach those ports that are in Amsterdam, New York, or even here in the Gulf, Texas, or along the Gulf of Mexico.
So I there'll be an impact, but it's not going to be huge unless some all-out war breaks out, right? And
We keep
that's
saying
what I
that.
think is concerning about this bombing of the funeral in Iran, is who did it, where did that come from, and what are the consequences going to be out of that? We don't know that right now.
Well, David, with this coming around the corner, you had on your Substack a great comment about BRICS and everything else. And I loved your answer to this really stupid guy, the Rodney Dangerfield of oil, me.
No, it was a good question, I think.
I think the petrodollar is going to be demised. It's already well on the way. Your comment back was phenomenal because the pricing matrices are not all there. I mean, they're going away. I don't know how it's going to happen. We just talked about the Red Sea that RT brought up. And when you talk about the dark fleet, all of the money being traded now in the Russian ruble and the Chinese yuan and everything else, it's just amazing how fast they've peeled out because of Biden's weaponization of the thing. Your comment, David, was phenomenal.
Well, I mean, I mean, the thing is, you're absolutely right. To the extent oil begins to be traded in those other currencies, and some of it is right now, then that's going to dilute the value of the dollar and its preeminence as the currency of mark in international trades. But right now, or at least the latest data I've seen, is that something around 90% of oil trades globally are still taking place in US dollars. And so, as long as that percentage is that high or approaching that high, the Brent price is going to remain the benchmark and it's going to be expressed in dollars. But as we go through time, I completely agree with you. I think the influence of BRICS and that alliance and a lot of other factors, including, as you've just mentioned, the Biden administration's weaponization of currency as a weapon of war, is inevitably going to encourage other countries to begin making trades in currencies, or other countries to start making trades in currencies other than the dollar. So over time, I mean, maybe in 2025, when I look at this, I may come to the same conclusion you did, right? That sometime during 2025, we're going to see a pretty radical shift. But for 2024, it's kind of hard to see that happening that quickly. But who knows? I mean, I've been wrong before. I get surprised all the time, and I fully expect a lot of these predictions to be radically wrong. So.
Well, RT, what do you think?
Well, here we are talking about predictions, and again, I'm recorded saying that oil was going to average $100 last year. Well, boy, was I wrong there. I think we averaged 80, and here we are talking about the rubles. I talked about that this morning on another interview that I did. That hey, with China and Russia now doing this in rubles. And yeah, it's only 90% today or 10% today, but it is kind of scary where that's going to go in 2024. And so when you look at the price of the barrel of oil today, it's already 30 days out. So we're already looking at February. So really, we're 11 months away, technically, in some forms or fashions from 2025. Or if they're doing it the other way, 2025 starts in October. So we're already 3 months into the fiscal year 2024. And I am worried because as we continue to produce here in America, we are not resupplying what we're doing here in America. We have just, I know David wrote another great piece in the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers and Texoga, which is the Texas Oil and Gas Association. But they also mentioned it that, hey, we have now, produced more oil in 2023 than we have in any year. That is awesome. However, rig count is still down way over 100 rigs prior to 2020. And we are not replenishing the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We're not even drilling new wells as much as we should be right now. Here at Pecos, God willing, we're going to knock out another 8 to 12. But had this been 2020, we'd probably be somewhere between 16 and 24. And the prices were a lot better, and the economy was in such a better place. So really, as we continue down 2024, David's comment about what's going to happen in 2025, we're going to be there sooner than we know it. And I'm still excited for 2024. So I'm not trying to poo-poo on the year by any means. I know it's going to be an epic year, but we need to be paying attention to what Russia's doing. No ands, ifs, or buts about that. And if we can help out in any way in slowing down them continuing to grab more countries to be part of BRICS. I heard a rumor that BRICS is going to get themselves a president, and I'm hearing very strong rumors that Vladimir Putin is wants to be president of BRICS.
It's
Yeah,
already
it's going to
going to
be
be the incoming president next year of that organization.
I talked to him
Oh.
on the plane from Brazil yesterday, and Armando asked me about that. And when I was sitting there visiting with him, he is the president for next year, RT. You bring up a fantastic point. His commitment is that he's going to bring on new members flawlessly, and BRICS is going to really have a huge impact. In fact, when I was visiting with him on that airplane, which is pretty funny, he was saying that the US weaponization of the US dollar, he doesn't mind it. It's mind over matter because the US, he doesn't mind because the US doesn't matter anymore.
Wow. Well, let me ask you guys this. Is it Venezuela or Argentina that's looking to join BRICS?
Argentina just refused to while the new one, correct me if I'm wrong there, David, because I usually use you as a fact checker on my Rodney Dangerfield energy look.
Well, it's up in the air. I mean, Argentina accepted an invitation to join in August, but they just had a presidential election, and the new president Milei is reviewing that, whether or not he wants Argentina to become formally a part of BRICS. And so it's kind of up in the air right now. He hasn't, at least as far as I've seen, I haven't seen any news today about it, but I don't think he has formally refused that. He's just reviewing it.
Well, here's one way that I look at this with Venezuela being part of it, Argentina reviewing it. One thing about OPEC was always over there. They were across the ocean. We didn't have to worry about them, anything like that. And yes, we're always going to compete with them. I understand that part. But by bringing bricks over to South America, I mean, I've got people crossing my borders here in Texas every day from South America. Okay. So the invasion of the oil, as far as this group coming into America, is on its way. And that's what scares me about Russia doing more business selling their oil in the ruble is that going to continue to transpire through South Africa, South America, excuse me, and work its way north? I mean, I
Yeah,
think
it
that's a valid
could.
question, right?
It could. Yeah, I mean, Brazil's president has talked about making not just oil trades, but other international import-export trades in his own currency rather than U.S. dollars. And but you know, I mean, the last several years, there's been a lot of talk about that from a lot of leaders of a lot of developing countries and developed countries like Brazil. But at the end of the day, the actual amount of money traded in other currencies has remained pretty low. And so, you know, that is people saying things in order to, as a negotiating tactic for deals with the United States, for example. And so, you know, until that percentage of dollar trades starts to move down for the US currency, you just have to take it all with a grain of salt.
Right. So let
But
me ask you.
I do expect that move to happen in the years to come. I want to be clear about that. I do expect that to happen ultimately.
So me being, a guy that drills oil wells for a living, right? Shoveling dirt. And rather than us just going out and bombing everybody, what could we do to combat that? Let's say by the end of 2026, it's something like 50-50. How can the United States, how can we stop that, bleeding, so to speak? Is there any formal way that we can
Well,
actually do that?
I mean, the best way to do it is to stop taking on $1.5 trillion of debt every year.
Ooh.
I mean, really and truly, that's the key is we're losing financial stability and strength in the United States because of all the debt we have taken on in recent years. And that's neither been a Democrat or a Republican fully to blame for that. That started when Donald Trump was president in 2020. And you know, you can't, pretty soon, within the next 2 to 3 years, unless something changes, our debt payments are going to exceed the rest of the budget. Okay, the rest of the federal budget. Well, you can't, I mean, a country can't survive financially that with that level of debt. So something dramatic is going to have to change, or we will lose that preeminent status as the currency of mark for international trades, because our dollar won't be the strongest currency in the world at that point.
Can I add George McMillan, who is a geopolitical fun kind of guy, and what I consider an expert? You guys need to visit with him. He has got a lot of good stuff. He has said that the expectation was intentional by the warmongers, kind of like if Lindsey Graham was a warmonger, it would be that same kind of discussion, and that is they were trying to get the debt to that point, and he feels like by his predictions, it's been brought in by 8 years. And David, I disagree with you a little bit in that, and it is already to the point where it's almost at the defense budget. And
Yeah, no, it's more than the defense
here's
budget this year.
and so George is fantastic when he talks about the left measures themselves by increasing the social programs, and then the warmongers judge themselves about how many wars they can do and how much defense budget and how much money. I don't know this, but Nikki Haley is accused to be very tight with the war machine. So I don't know that, but
Yes, I think that's pretty obvious. Yes.
thank you. I just like being fact
She's
checked.
Lindsey Graham with 3-inch heels. Yes.
So, but that measurement is wars, money back. And so the left has this. I vote all politicians out.
I've said many times we would have better government if we just selected 535 names at random from, using Google or the phone book or whatever you want to use, we'd
Not
get better
Google.
governance than we're getting right now.
Right.
Wow.
Not
Y'all talk about the war machines, and it just blows my mind how our taxpayer dollars are going to Ukraine, and then they're buying all of our weapons back here in America. And it's like, why do we even got to give the money over to Ukraine if all they're doing is turning around? And I'm not against Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, whoever, Bell, any of that. It's just like, why don't we just give them the money rather than having to ship it over to Ukraine first before they're
Well,
buying the weapons? I'm just.
money laundering does occur. And why does that list, and I'm going to put it in the show notes, that list of politicians that have visited Ukraine and how much money they have gotten back out of it, and the validity of that list is kind of frightening. You have Republicans and you have Democrats that have gone to Ukraine. And they're now millionaires. And how much money has come back from Ukraine to these chatterheads? Sorry, I'm getting all grumped out.
Well, we talk about that. You just look at back on the energy side of things, and here we were talking about now the Red Sea, and if the debacle in the Red Sea is going to be the domino that really tips oil prices up. And wasn't the war in Ukraine by Russia invading supposed to be the one thing that just shot oil prices up to, high
Well,
heaven? And now we're,
it for a
again,
while,
we're still at $71 oil. So, what's it going to take for oil to hit that high to where, the big boys, the Chevrons, the Exxons open up to drill? And also then, something's got to happen to where we can get excited about drilling oil wells here in America that's going to add jobs, but then also replenish what we've depleted over the last 16 to 18 months.
Absolutely fantastic points. Do you think, though, the fear of the market of demand is the thing holding it back, RT and David?
I think that there's a lot of factors that have held investment back. ESG being a big one. The demand's strong. I swear I saw an article this morning talking about weak demand. I don't remember if it was at oil price or something. Weak oil demand is why oil prices are low. Well, oil demand grows every month. It was up 2 million barrels a day last year. It's going to grow another 2 million barrels a day this year. That's not why prices are low. Prices are low because supply is exceeding demand. Simple as that. And the United States has played a big role in that. We increased production overall in the United States, even with a falling rig count, by almost a million barrels a day in 2023. And so, when you got that coming from the United States, you've got Guyana all, now producing 500,000 barrels a day. It's going to be over a million barrels a day in 2 years. You have West Africa booming offshore. You have all these boom areas now across the globe that is more than exceeding the rise in demand. And that's why prices are soft and they're going to stay soft and unless there's a recession that kills demand. And
I'm going to do my Biden imitation here real quick. I'm leaning in for our podcast listeners. Hey, David, I know how to poke you. And when you get poked like a bear, you're fun. I already knew the, I was sitting there going, poke.
that wasn't really much of a rant, really. You haven't got me mad yet.
RT, can you poke David any better?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm going to let you do that.
I had a really good rant on the Energy Transition podcast Tuesday. I don't even remember what it was about now, but boy, I really got mad about something. But I've
It was
calmed
so
down
good
now
you
because I
blacked
can't
out while you
remember what it
ran it.
was. Yeah. Well,
Golly.
Nice.
Well, I for our listeners and viewers out there that haven't checked out the Energy Transition with you and Armando Caivana and Tammy Nemeth and Stu Turley, I definitely recommend it. And the reason why is because you're getting a perspective from literally four corners of the world. And you can't get no better than that. Then you can hear us talk all day long. But let's see what else is going on outside of Texas, outside the world. And guess what? it's happening all over, and that's a little bit worrisome to me when it's not
It
happening just here.
sure is nice that Armando likes hiring the handicap. I'm the one handicap on there because Irina is so cool. Tammy is so cool, and I just absolutely love Armand. David, I really worship, but we'll leave that alone.
I'm just there to add the comic relief.
There it is.
All right, now we're getting mean. Hey, we got about 2 more minutes here, guys. David, what do you use? I love your article on Substack. It'll be in the show notes. What do you see for biggies coming around the corner on your thing? I think nuclear is going to have a resurgence around the world. It's going to be slowed because of the regulatory legislation through regulation. I see natural gas coming big in, just like I mentioned yesterday in the thing. China has just blowed up, as we say here in Bear Country, blowed up their natural gas production. What do you think?
I think coal's going to have a better year than anybody, mainly because of China and developing countries needing cheap and affordable and easily accessed energy to build their economies. And I think we'll use record amounts of coal again this year, just like we have the last 2 years. And all will have a strong year despite the kind of soft price. Natural gas, though, I agree with you. Natural gas is a growth area, again, for the same reasons that coal is a growth area, because the country's concerns, they're prioritizing energy security over climate priorities, and so they're looking for reliable and inexpensive forms of 24/7 energy. And wind and solar don't provide that, any of those factors. Gas and coal do. And so natural gas and coal are the growth areas. Nuclear will come eventually. For 2024, I don't really see it making a great deal of progress for just what you said. Slow change in regulation. And frankly, all these trillions of dollars that are pouring into renewables. And so renewable lobbies in the United States and other free countries are going to lean on policymakers to slow play adoption of nuclear. And I just think it's in a really tough spot politically.
That our team.
I want to piggyback off of David with the nuclear for 2024. I think, and I'll do a quick shout out to Miss America 2023, Grace Stanky. She's done a great job advocating this year, and I think that's going to be part of her mission in life with her. I know she just graduated from Wisconsin with a nuclear engineering degree. But I think 2024 needs to be the year of education. I think a lot of individuals still have a very bad fear of nuclear. The other day I told some people how Abilene Christian is partnering up with, I think, Georgia Tech, that whole thing that we've talked about in the past. And they're like, well, do people know that there's going to be a nuclear reactor there? And da, da, da. And it's like, it's pretty safe. And so we really just need to do a better job right now of sharing with people how safe nuclear really is. We just have that bad stereotype with it. And I will say, I think one day, once I can figure out how to turn it into something like oil and gas, I'm pretty sure Pecos will be right there with it as well, because it's something for the future. And like you mentioned, natural gas, we talked about it last week on our show with Dr. Ed Ireland. It's just too perfect of an energy source not to use it right now. And really, it probably should be worth a lot more than what it is at $2 an MCF right now.
Guys, I just really love hearing your feedback and everything else. I do think solar is going to creep up, and I think wind has really got some headwind. And so
Wind has headwinds. That's a play on words.
wow, I see what you did there.
I had another play on words a little while ago that I loved.
Well, we must have missed that one then,
We
Stu.
missed it.
Oh yeah,
Sorry.
remember it was the mining one? Never mind. Okay. Hey, with that, We appreciate everybody. We love all the fans' feedback. David, how do they get a hold of you?
Substack, davidblackman.substack.com.
Great. RT, how do they get a hold of you?
Oh, man, go to our website, thecrudetruth.com, and reach out there.
All right. And my name's Stu Turley. If you can find me at energynewsbeat.co or .com. And we want to talk to any energy experts, or I don't care, wind, solar, humanitarian, Bitcoin. Love me some Bitcoin. It is fabulous. Have some fun, guys. See you.